98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show. Here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, we are live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Yambadoro. Hi, Gambo!
Burnsy, what's going on?
Oh, it's so good to hear a crystal clear connection. No delay, no problems. We're in the same room, Gambo, even though you're at home and I'm here. It's like
how about that, right? Technology. Yeah.
Technology.
Just unbelievable.
It's just awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing because I did the show from, you know, you did too, right? We did the show from home for like a year. Most of that year, you were here at my house with me during when the pandemic was first hit. We did the show from home for a long time, like almost a year. And the majority of that, it was me and you. We were here. We were in my kitchen. We were in my office. We were in my backyard, which was the best.
Yeah.
When it was nice out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but for the last like month or so, I've been at home and you are at the station. And it was like yesterday was the first time that we've ever like really had like a technical.
There was one day. There was one day, if you'll remember, when so we split up. You're at home. I'm at home, and we're doing the show. There was one day where my connection got so wonky.
Yes.
That I literally got a call from our boss, and they said, yeah, you're done for the day. You're done. And I'm like, oh, good. I have the rest of the day off. Yeah. I'm going to go watch a movie or something.
Wait, is that how you get the day off?
Yes, that's how.
Hold on, Bernie, I can't hear you.
What are you saying? Another half hour of that, and you probably would have had the day off yesterday.
I got to finish that Netflix show that's got me, like, bedazzled right
that's,
now.
That's how you would. Now, what's that one again? It's called? It's called Area 51.
It's 81? 880?
Come on, it's got you bedazzled. You're so bedazzled, you don't even remember the name of it.
But you know, I always say this. I don't remember the name of shows or movies. Or
I'm bedazzled by this show. What was it called again?
I don't even know if that's a word. What did I say it was?
Something 81.
Archive 81.
There you go. Archive 81.
Archive 81. Yeah.
All I know is, hey, tonight, I know the Coyotes are on tonight. I'm just going to give everyone a sneak preview right now of what's on tonight coming up at the end of the show. Okay. What's on tonight is sushi to go on the couch.
Always on Friday nights for you.
A gin and tonic.
Whoa,
and Ozark. That is what's on tonight at the Burns household.
It's not a bad night.
It's a really good night.
It's not a bad night,
sushi
right?
Sushi to go, gin and tonic, and Ozark, because I got to find out what happens to those crazy money launderers there in the middle of Missouri.
Those bastards.
I know, right? In the meantime, let's weigh in on our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
Bridges goes up to get the board, and there's the final buzzer. Suns win 109-101, the final from Dallas. They run the table on the five-game trip and are 35-9 on the season, including a league-best 18-5.
Never get tired of it. I never get tired of watching this team.
No.
I never get tired of watching this team in the fourth quarter.
Didn't you tweet that out last night?
I did.
It never gets old.
It can't be said enough how much I enjoy watching this basketball team. Suns beat the Mavs last night 109-101. They were down, 9 points with about 9 minutes to go.
89-80 after Brunson scored on a drive. And, you know, I remember sitting to myself there saying, and I don't know if they're going to win. Like, they're just going to win.
Yeah.
Like unless you're up 20, like, I was watching the game, and I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, I swear, if I could have bet a car payment on the Suns when they were down 89-80, I would. If somebody would have said, right now, they're down 89-80, car payment, the Suns are going to win, I'll say, give me it. I'll bet it. They're going to freaking, I know they're going to win. I just know they're going to win. Because when it came, in the final 5 minutes of the game, you know, they put on this cape and they turn into freaking Superman.
They do.
But like, this is unbelievable. Like, I don't think we give this enough. What happens in the final 5 minutes of a basketball game where they morph into, you know, freaking King Kong and like, there's nothing you could do.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing. If you're not up by 20 in the final 5 minutes, you might as well just quit because you're not going to win.
Did you see the stat they rolled out on TNT after the game? I think it was Ernie Johnson. Now, it's going to sound underwhelming, but when you think about it, it's a really good stat. The Phoenix Suns, when trailing going into the fourth quarter this year, are 8-8. That's the best record in the NBA for a team. Usually you're going to the fourth quarter losing. You're not winning a lot of those games. Not a lot of teams win those games. Phoenix Suns are a 500 basketball team when they're going into the fourth quarter losing a game because they're so good in the fourth quarter. And you're right. There are two things. There are two reasons to me that stand out as to why the Suns are so good in these clutch moments. Number one, they defend the hell out of the basketball, especially in the last 5 minutes of that game. They were terrific last night against the Mavs. They suffocated Dallas.
Does Devin Booker make that block at any point in the first 5 years of his career?
No. No.
Does he make that play?
Probably not.
He made the block, and this is just, I don't know how I would hate to be an official. The game's so fast, and these guys are so athletic. I don't know how you see it. He made the block, and even the TNT broadcast crew was like, "Oh, he got his arm." They showed the replay. He gets all ball. I'm like, why are you saying he got his arm? Like, yeah. If you don't know, just say I don't know.
Well,
they showed the replay, and it was clear. It was a great block.
I know, but in fairness, I mean, I'll give the TNT broadcasters the same excuse you just gave the referees. It happened so fast. And he went down so hard, it was just natural to assume that Devin Booker clobbered him. And you're right. As soon as they showed that replay, it was clear. It was all ball. And Chris Paul and Devin Booker, man, they knew it right away, right? They were like, review it. And he did. And then the second thing, Gambo, is that on the other end of the floor, man, it's not just one guy. Look at last night in the five minutes.
Bismack Biyombo.
Boy, it was everybody, though. It was Chris Paul hitting a big three. Paul hit the dagger.
When he hit that three, it was over. Like, it was over.
Yeah, but it was Mikal Bridges hitting a big shot, and it was Biyombo hitting a couple of shots, and it was Booker hitting a shot and a couple of assists and contributing defensively. It's everybody who's on the floor, you're right?
You can't defend them. I mean, you're right. I mean, if you look from, okay, if I take it from 655, they're up 95-87. Hardaway hits a three-pointer, they're up 95-87. Jay Crowder, three-pointer. Mikal scores on a basket, his own follow. Book hits two free throws and then scores off a turnover. Biyombo scores off a pass from Chris Paul, gets fouled, hits the basket. Mikal scores again on a drive. Biyombo has a free throw and then a basket. Paul hits a three-pointer. So that's what? Paul, Biyombo, Mikal, Book, Jay. Five different guys scoring in the final 6 minutes of the game. Yep. Like, what are you going to do? Like, and nobody's going for 10. It's just like, they share the wealth. It's not like you're hot, you shoot it. I mean, Chris Paul hadn't scored a basket. He went like, there was about 7.5 minutes left. He hit a jump and it made it 92-87. Then he didn't score again until he hit that three-pointer. That was basically, you know, the nail in the coffin of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. Devin Booker, after the game, said, "I knew if we kept it close, we'd win down the stretch.
I know we're in a good spot. You know, like I was talking about earlier, we all trust each other, and we had the experience. We had a lot of learning curves last year, but, you know, having that time and that experience together, I think, well, I know, put us in a situation where, you know, we never hit the panic button. We never get flustered or out of whack. You know, we just stick to what we do, and, you know, we perform well down the stretch."
They're so calm. They're so collected. Chris Paul after the game.
I mean, it's fun because, you know, with a team like ours, like I said, it's not just a one person or two people. You know, we got a system. You know, we play a certain way. We play off reads. And it could be anybody on any given night. You know, so it's so fun to know that it's a unit. It's all of us moving as one. And so when we're in those situations, you know, it's not always going to work out for us, but we know what we want to get to.
I mean, what are you going to do? Like, it's like you can't – there's nothing you could do. Like, you're the – like, honestly, I feel that way. Like, there's nothing you can do. They are going to take over the game in the final five minutes of the game. They're just going to do it.
Yeah.
You can't stop them. Like, you know, you got to hope that you're up by 20. So it's too much for them to overcome it. But forget about the 8-8 when they're trailing by the fourth quarter. I would love to know what the record is when it's within 6 to 8 points with, you know, 7 minutes left in the game. Because their record, that record's got to be unbelievable, you know? Not when they're up by 20 or – but when it's a 5, 6, 7, 8-point game, there's nothing you could do. They're going to beat you. They're just going to beat you. They're better than you. They're just like they said, and they're calm. They're just calm.
Yeah.
They don't really. Do you think when they were down like nine, they didn't panic? You don't worry. You just, you know, it's just a couple of positions, a couple of stops, and a couple of baskets. A whole new game.
Okay, I don't have the exact number you're looking for, but this is close, okay? And this is, of course, from Kellen Olsen. This was in his game story today on ArizonaSports.com. Clutch minutes, when the score is within 5 points,
yeah,
under 5 minutes left, Phoenix is 15-3 in those games. So 5 minutes or less, 5 points or closer, Suns are 15-3. At any point in a game, in the fourth quarter, in the last 5 minutes, when it's under 5 points, the Suns are 15-3 in those games. They right, so just that, so, don't lose.
So I'm not great at math, but that's 5 out of 6. So I can go 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18. That's 5 out of 6. What's a winning percentage? 5 out of 6. I mean, it's better than 75. It's better than 80, isn't it?
In terms of percentages, yes, it's better.
They played 18 games and they've won 15 out of them. That's an easy thing. 3, 6, 9, 12, 15. 5 out of 6. That's an incredible. Whatever it is, and I don't know the answer to it because I'm not good at math.
83%. 83%.
There you go. There you go. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. That's why you're here. You went to college. 83%.
It's because I've got a calculator on my phone. It has nothing to do with my college degree. It's because I have a calculator on my phone. And I didn't even know. 5 divided by 6 equals 0.8333333.
That's unbelievable.
It is.
It's unbelievable.
And we're not done talking about them because when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, they're 35-9. They're the NBA's best record with their recent dominant play. They're the best team in the NBA this year, but we want to go even bigger than that, and we'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, afternoons.
Doncic on the dribble drive, gets to the left block, fades, and then throws a pass in the right corner to Finney Smith, who hangs, gets blocked in the air by Booker, but a foul is called, and quickly three Suns say, let's take another look at that. Monty, you might want to challenge this one.
John Bloom with a call last night here on 98.7 FM, yeah. Arizona Sports
Station. I'm going to continue to say this, Scott. He's a star. He's got so much passion and energy, and yeah. I know I say it every time, but I mean, every time we play a highlight of John Bluen calling a game, I'm like, God, this guy's freaking great.
Yeah, he is really, really good. He's really, really good at what he does, and it's a pleasure hearing him do the road show. Suns win last night 109-101 against the Dallas Mavericks on national TV. Another clutch time performance from the Suns. Looking at the standings now.
Okay.
They have the best record in the NBA.
By a lot. Yep.
A buddy of mine did this on Twitter. And it's funny when you look at the NBA organized by losses instead of wins, it doesn't really make that much of a difference, but it is crazy to look at it. The Phoenix Suns are the only team in the NBA still in single digits in losses. The next, they have 9. They're 35-9 on the season. The next closest team is Golden State with 13 losses. The next closest one after that is the Bulls with 15 losses. Everybody else 16, 16, 19, 18, 20, right? I mean, this is the top of the NBA, okay? The closest team to the Suns in losses. And here's another one that'll blow you away.
Okay.
35-9, the only team single digits in losses. Remember, 3 of their losses came in the first week and a half of the season. Gambo, since they started 1-3, they're 34-6. On the year.
It's crazy.
It's
and when
crazy.
You project it out, right, they're past the midway point of the season was 41 games.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, correct.
They played 44 games right now. So they're past the midway point. So you're talking about you're projecting them to finish with 17 losses in an 82-game season. That's a 65-win season.
Yes.
That's a 65-win season.
And that is the best season in the history of Phoenix Suns basketball.
Yeah, and that is, I mean, I'm going to buy pizza for everybody in the web department that all predicted 60 wins. I really am. I'm going to buy you guys all pizza. I'm going to bring, you know, because when they started off with those losses, I was like, you guys are 65 wins? What are you guys smoking over there in that web department? Like, come on. Come on, man. Everybody's gunning for them.
I don't know. But
they got a target on their back this year. They're not going to 65 wins.
But that's why I like walking by the web department so much. It's like, what's going on over there? You know, because, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Win-loss percentage. All right. And I know for some, and I'm a Forever Suns fan. If you listen to the show for even 5 minutes,
I know.
And I know you've adopted them. Okay. Cause you've lived here for what? 26 years, 27 years, whatever it is.
I love them.
Okay.
I mean, I've been here for 25 years. I love the Suns. Okay. I root for the Suns just as much as anybody else.
Of course.
Yeah, I just don't have the history.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you go back to Dennis Johnson. I go back to Louis Orr. You know, you go back to Paul Westfall, Walter Davis.
Back
to Marvin Webster.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, we just, like, you know, I'm going back to Michael Ray Richardson. You know, you're going back to those. So we just have a different, like, when I go back and look at the team that I rooted for, it's, you know, much different than a team.
Of course. Yeah. The Suns, other than my parents, the Suns are my first love. And so to look.
Is it possible that you loved the Suns before your parents or no?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
They fed me. They sheltered me. They loved me.
They grounded you.
Well, yeah, Gambo, you have no idea how good of a kid I was when I was younger. I was so good. I never got punished for anything because I never did anything.
Did you ever get suspended
punished.
From school? Did you ever get detention? Did you ever?
No. Never. Sorry.
Okay, you were.
Yeah,
I was
good at two shoes.
Yeah, they should have been very proud of you. They should have been very proud of you.
Enough about me. Let's talk about the Suns. Their current.
I don't know why they liked your brother better, but okay.
Their current win loss percentage. They're winning games at a 7.95 clip.
Yes.
Okay, that is the best in franchise history. Now I know we still have about half the season to go, but the 7.95 win percentage, you can. So let's pose the question right now. They're clearly the best team in the NBA so far this year. There's zero debate to that. No one can. Yeah. You can't come with anybody else and say, "Oh no, this team is better."
Okay.
Are they the best team in the history of the Suns?
Boy, that is a great question. I'm going to say that they are. I'm going to say that this team is better. Now, I know more about the D'Antoni team than I do about the Barkley team. So I'm going to talk about the D'Antoni team. I'll let you talk about the Barkley team because the truth is I don't, you know, I wasn't here for that run and you were. So my thoughts on why this team is better than the Nash Amari team is that I just think that this team is so much better defensively than that. That team could score lights out, but so can this team. But this team, it has multiple defenders all over the place and versatile defenders. And that team had Sean Marion. Okay. Nash was not a good defensive player. Chris Paul is. If you go player by player, this team has more size. This team has more athleticism. Well, the athleticism is close because Amari and Sean were freak athletes. The shooting is very good and very comparable with both teams. But I think this team is better. But I think that just what makes this team better to me is just they are so much better defensively than that team was.
Yeah, and that's the same argument I would have used to say I think they're better than the Barkley-era teams. Those teams, I think, were a little underrated in terms of how they defended. But the Suns, and we've said this 1,000 times, let's make it 1,001. The Suns, throughout the organizational history, they've never really been known as a great defensive basketball team. That's never been their calling card. They've had great individual defensive players. You mentioned Marion. Dan Marley is another. They've had guys who can defend, but as a team, and just go back to last night's game. Why are the Suns so good in clutch minutes? Because defensively, they lock you down. They shut you down. They had, what, 13 steals? Last night?
13 steals. I think Dallas had one. 13 steals. Mikal Bridges had four.
Yeah. The Suns outscored Dallas 31-7 on points off of turnovers. They deflected 18 different basketballs last night over the course of the game. The Mavs, you mentioned yesterday going into the game that the game plan was going to be for their bigs to shoot a bunch of threes. By the way, we haven't even mentioned that they did all of this without DeAndre Ayton, which is very worthy of being mentioned. You mentioned their starters were going to, especially their big guys, were going to try to shoot a lot of threes because of the advantage they had, and they did. Their starters, 7 of 27 from the three-point line last night. This team gets after it defensively better than any Barkley-era team did, better than ever any Nash-era team ever did.
The Suns started 31-4 one of those years with Nash. They were 31-4, and they were killing everybody, and they were first in the league in scoring and all of the three-pointers made in percentage and all of that stuff. They were just – they were an offensive juggernaut. But what, you know, what prevented this team ultimately was the depth. They didn't have the depth that this team is deeper, and this team is better defensively. That team, you can make an argument that team was better offensively, but it's close. It's close, but this team had current team has better depth than the D'Antoni didn't like depth. He didn't believe in depth. He, especially when the playoffs came in, he played 7 or 8 guys, and that would be it. This team is deeper than that team, and this team is much better defensively than that team.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, shifting from basketball to football, it's personally my favorite weekend this weekend, the divisional round of the playoffs, and we've called upon an old friend to help us look at the 4 matchups. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.
Football Friday with Burns and Gambo, presented by 72 Sold. Get your price. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Burns and Gambo here on 98.7 FM, Arizona sports station. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns. The divisional round of the NFL playoffs coming up this weekend. 4 really good-looking games, 4 very interesting games with a lot of stuff to talk about. And one of the guys we love talking football with, Fox Sports analyst, talk show host up in Seattle, generally knowledgeable guy about the sport of football since he played it for so long, our buddy Brock Huer joins us here on the 72 Sold Sports Line. Clear as a bell from Seattle, Washington. How are you doing, Brock?
Well, do the Cardinals and Seahawks play this week?
You know what? I wasn't even going to bring either one of those teams up. I wasn't even gonna suggest we should talk about either one of those teams.
Can I just bring up one little thing with that?
College basketball? Because I know you've been tweeting a lot about college basketball.
I just tweeted one. Just about the Huskies last night. That was just one little tweet. Now, I'm curious of, you guys have, I'm sure, taken that game apart last weekend, forward and backward, and sick of doing it, and flushed it, and all that stuff. And I understand, I think I was seeing one of you, maybe Gambo, your tweet, or someone's tweet about Cliff and a difficult Zoom call with his bosses, Bidwell and others. Did you guys were probably not watching the Manning cast, right?
No, not live. No,
and I wouldn't either. If my playoff team's and I'm watching the actual game and everything else, but there was a telling moment at the end of the game. Salk and I were talking about this earlier in the week, and Russell was the only dual guest for the Manning brothers all season long, and he did a pretty good job. He was hyped up, and he wanted to show his football knowledge and everything else. But there was a shot in the fourth quarter when the game was in hand. There was no way the Cardinals were coming back. But, you know, after a punt or something, Russell was like, you know what, guys, this is the point. I'm on the side. There's like 8 minutes to go. He's like, I'm on the sidelines, and I'm encouraging guys. Hey, as long as there's time, we got a chance. As long as there's time, we got a chance. We got to hang in there. You know, we were down 31-0 to Carolina in a playoff game, and came all the way down to an onside kick. And I just reminded the guys, so we got to believe. You know, we got to do this. And they take a shot, and it wasn't like that broadcast is tied in to the. You're right. The Manning cast follow the lead of the main broadcast. But as he's doing this, they take a shot of Kyler on the bench, and it is 180 the opposite. He is
by
just
himself.
By himself, down in the dumps,
sulking,
a look of disgust, a look of despair, a look of, yep, this whole thing is done. And I just thought, man, the next time I talk to Burns and Gambo and we have a conversation, and we'll have, I'm sure, other ones this offseason, and we'll see what Kyler's deal looks like and if and when that gets done and all that stuff. But it was such a snapshot of where Russ, you know, and it's not fake and phony with Russ. He genuinely believes that and has led epic comebacks over a decade. And he is not seeing a swoon in December and January as the Cardinals have the last few years. And I thought that was, I just wanted to tell you guys, like, I'm sure you didn't see it. I'm sure no one in that market talked about it, but it sure struck me and Salk and others in Seattle, like, come on. You know, Kyler, like, you can take a page out of that guy's book of how you lead through adversity.
Gambo, you want to take this one or you want me to?
I'll start and you can finish. Okay. We've seen it before. This isn't the first time, and we did see that. There are questions about his leadership. And a lot of times you go, he's young, he's immature, and he's, you know, a little bit of a sore loser. And, you know, that's how we've talked about this. Like, this has been a conversation before where he pouts on the sideline and things like that. The question that I have is I'm a big believer in you are who you are. You know, that I don't see. I mean, some people change, but most don't. So
okay.
I kind of think that if that's, you know, that's who you are, that's who you are. That, oh, I mean, he's been in the league for 3 years now and it hasn't changed. So what makes you think it's going to change in the next
Burnsy?
Year?
I disagree with Gamble a little bit in the sense that I do think people's, you know, personality can change over time. I'm a very different type of person and personality wise now than I was when I was in my early 20s, for sure.
Yep.
I came out of that game. I never expected to have the questions about Kyler Murray that I do now coming out of that game. Like, if you had painted all these scenarios to me of, well, this is going to happen or that could happen.
Yep.
I never thought we'd come out of that game where I'd seriously wonder to myself, oh my God, is Kyler Murray the guy? I don't know if he is or not. And I never thought that as bad as that game could be on Monday night, that that would be a question I would even entertain.
Okay, I'll
coming
tackle.
Out of it, you know? And now it's kind of in my head a little bit. I'm wondering, is he the guy? I don't know. Yep.
I know we want to get to the playoffs, but I think this is such a fascinating conversation. And I'll tackle both of those. And I'll counter a little bit of Kyler with Matthew Stafford on the other side. And I will actually lean a little bit Burnsy side here, Gambo, because, you know, in chatting, I had the Rams late in the year against the Seahawks. I filled in for Moose, who was out. And we sat with Sean McVay. And this just struck me. I wrote it on my board. I was looking at it the other day. And, you know, Sean McVay said, Matthew Stafford has the highest emotional intelligence of any QB I've ever been around in my life. His ability to genuinely connect with people. Okay, so Matthew Stafford grew up affluent, South Lake Carroll, whatever, goes to Georgia, party boy. I don't think the greatest connector, but I think experiences along the way and then ultimately goes to Detroit and lands there. And wife goes through brutal health conditions and you go through brutal adversity in Detroit and you go through so many coaches and you just get crapped on over and over. And I think it does build up his ability to connect with anybody in each of those environments. And I thought about Kyler, right? The winningest quarterback in Texas history. We've talked about this. Not a lot of adversity. Goes to Norman, Oklahoma, basically the same kind of demographics, locale, and everything else. Wins a Heisman Trophy, comes to Arizona, is not, you know, has just not been calloused, has not had the scar tissue, has not had the connections that it takes, right, with people, to connect with people like a Matthew Stafford has, like a Russell Wilson, who was at NC State, right, has some scars, has some burns, goes to Wisconsin, becomes a captain, gets pooped on, third-round pick, you know, goes through, has difficulties with teammates, calling them out, teacher's pet, right? I mean, you just go through it, and you mature, and you age, and you connect. And that would be, and I think moving forward, the biggest thing. Leadership is hard to quantify, but we know those in your building that you're in, right? We know those in schools that you go visit. You know those amongst your friends, your kids' friends. Like, that's a connector. That's a connector. That guy
okay,
can
let me
connect.
Jump in. Let me jump in. This was in the New York Times the other day. Murray does not watch much game film. He tends to hold the ball outstretched when he runs. He's the rare person who didn't have to adjust. But there's a whole story about how he doesn't really like to watch game film. He doesn't feel like he needs to watch game film. Come on, is that not a... Like, that should be a red flag, shouldn't it? Shouldn't you want to watch game film? Shouldn't that be a major tool to get better as a player?
It is. Now, look at Mahomes and Josh Allen, who are playing this weekend. Both of those guys, I was actually listening to Mark Sanchez this morning while I was working out, and he made a good point. He said, you know what Josh Allen is? He's a post-snap guy. I don't want to overload Josh Allen with 100 pieces of information. His brain, his game, his play, he's not Peyton Manning. He's different. He's a post-snap creator. He's an artist after the snap, right? And he's grown, and he's been calloused, and he had to take steps. He had a rough playoff game, his first one. So I think that there is a maturation level to that. But yes, Gambo, that does not that modus operandi, if indeed that is it, that does not fly for a long time in this league, and that doesn't get you better over the course of time.
See, this is why you're such an accomplished radio host, because this conversation is infinitely better than the one we actually booked you for, Brock.
Yeah. I've got one more.
Okay, go ahead. Go for it.
I got one more. Let me take you, because you were a quarterback, and you played at the highest level. You played in the NFL. You lose a game the way Kyler Murray lost a game. Okay, your coach is saying you're going to play the best game of your life. You play the worst game of your life. How long, and I want your, just as, I want you, not Kyle, you.
Yes.
Brock Huard plays the worst game of his life.
Five interceptions in the Apple Cup in 1997 to send the Cougars to their first Rose Bowl in 65 years. I got it. Okay, I got it.
Wow.
Continue. I got it.
Okay. No,
I got that
game. NFL, you made the NFL after that?
I could close my eyes. I threw as many picks in that game as I did the 11 that preceded it. So, okay, yes.
Let me get on with my question.
That game. Go ahead.
Let me get on with my question. You play the worst game of your life at the worst time in the playoffs. How much time do you before you start getting back to work? Do you give yourself a week? Do you give yourself a month? Do you go to the Bahamas and or do you give yourself 2 days and then you're back in the weight room, you're back in the film room and you're trying to get better? I'm just curious, how long?
Well, in college we had winter mat drills right away in bowl games, so you just continue. Yeah, I wouldn't get away from it, but I wasn't the athlete he is. Like I couldn't take 2 months off, right? I mean, I had to just grind, and I never had his level of athleticism. It's a blessing and a curse, right? I mean, he can get out of trouble. He can be Josh Allen, blessing and a curse, post-snap. Like, wow, this guy runs over people, stiff arms guys, throws it 70 yards. He's a freak of nature, right? And Josh and Kyler are of that vein, and they're artists, and they're gifted, and they're athletic. So, I think he can get away from it, but once you get back to it, he's got to be the one, the first one in the door at off-season workouts. That's what I would do, Gambo, because I watched Peyton Manning do that, right? And if he's there at the first day in April of off-season workouts, guess who else is there? Marvin's there. Edrin's there. Yeah. Everyone else is there, because if he's there, we all got to be there. So, you know, and we have the same conversation about Russell. After the season, their center, Ethan Posick, had a great line in the locker room. They asked him, what clicked? What turned the last 5 weeks? He's like, well, maybe we should have practiced this offseason. Maybe we should have played in the preseason. Maybe we had a new system and a new coordinator, and, Russell just showed up for mandatory camp, and we didn't play one snap as a unit in the preseason. Wow. Maybe we should have. And I think that's going to be a big consideration moving forward, is that if I'm Kyler, man, yeah, I'm the first one in the building. The first day we can all be there, back at work, whenever that is in April.
Brilliant stuff, Brock. We appreciate your time. You know we do. We'll talk in the NFL
playoffs
later.
Loved all your predictions. Yes, on the four games.
Well,
that's
we're going to hold you to all those predictions for this weekend, the ones we didn't get because we're out of time.
We'll talk next Friday. See you, boys.
Sounds good. Brock Huard, our buddy from Seattle, Fox football analyst, radio host, and frequent guest of the Burns and Gambo show. When we come back, not one, but two of the best teams in basketball reside in the state of Arizona. We've already talked about one. The other, are they actually going to hang a banner at the end of this season, too? U of A hoops next on the Burns and Gambo show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
All right, we're back here on the Burns and Gambo show. Eric's got our Twitter poll question of the day. Usually we roll it out at 2:30, but we were talking with Brock. It's a Suns-related question, and then we'll get into our Wildcat talk. What you got for us today, Eric?
It's a pretty easy one. Question that you guys already kind of covered, but I want to see the fans' response to it as well. Are we witnessing the best Suns team of all time? The answers are yes, no, a Barkley-era team, or no, a Nash-era team. So those are your three. Yes, no Barkley, and no Nash.
Look, emotionally... Go ahead, Gambo. Go ahead.
I'm going with yes. This is the best Suns team I've seen.
Yeah, emotionally, I had a deeper connection with the Barkley team because of my age and where I was in life. But I think we are witnessing the best Phoenix Suns basketball team in the history of the organization. They're unbelievable right now. I'm going to answer. Maybe I'm getting caught up in the moment. I'm going to answer yes. I think this is the best. What's our audience say?
Well, if you're caught up in the moment, so am I. And so is 79.4% of our audience. They say yes. 11.8% say no. A Barkley-era team was better. And 8.8% say no. A Nash era. But I don't think we're getting caught up in the moment, guys. I think we're just witnessing some of the best basketball, not just in Phoenix Suns history, but in NBA history.
They're playing very, very well right now. That's the poll question. You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, at Burns and Gambo. One word on social media is where you can find it. Speaking of high-level basketball going on here in the state of Arizona, Ballo with 21 points last night as third-ranked U of A beat Stanford in a game that wasn't really close, 85-57. Now, they lost to Bellis to a sprained ankle in this game. But U of A continues to roll on, Gambo, ranked third in the country and really starting to get some notoriety for these wins they're putting together right now.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoy. I watched the whole game last night after the Suns and the Mavs. I put that game on and I watched it. And I've watched U of A 5, 6, 7 times this year. I mean, I watched them against Michigan early. I watched them against Illinois. I've watched a lot of their games. They're really, really good. They beat the hell out of Stanford last night. I mean, they were unreal in that. And it was never a game. I mean, and they're deep. I mean, with Larson coming off the bench, he was good. Bala was, I mean, that kid was just, man, he's got this big smile, and he's always just, you know, dunking the ball, and 21 points, 7-for-8 shooting. He hit his free throws. Man, and that kid's 7 feet tall, 260 pounds. They've got great size. They shot 55% from the field last night. The kid Terry's really good. They're just deep. They're talented. They're deep. They could shoot. They've got size. They've got depth. The Creasa kid, you know, he's a good player. Didn't have a great game last night, but he's a good ball handler and a good floor leader. There's a lot to like about this team, Burnsy. There really is. I think they're legit.
I want to play this soundbite from Fran Fraschilla. He was commenting before the Stanford game yesterday, and then I'm going to make an admission about U of A basketball here in a moment. First, Fran Fraschilla on whether U of A can win the championship.
They're among a handful of 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 10 teams that are going to have a chance to win a national championship. Arizona's that good. They may be the best team in the country. We don't know. Coaches always, you know, media people say, well, this is the best team in the country right now. That changes week to week. But when you look at Arizona, they're the tallest team in the country. They get up and down the floor better than anybody. In fact, they're number one in offensive tempo in the KenPom stats. And what I love about this team is they fit Tommy Lloyd style. Tommy is a very Eurocentric guy. You know, he's been used to being around the international kids who really understand the team concept, but they have size, they have toughness, their guard play is good. They've got a really tight rotation of 7 guys. And the other thing, I said this to you off the air, I really respect Tommy, and Ernie will know what I mean. He's acknowledged that Sean Miller left him a really good team.
I like that last part especially. Yeah. He has acknowledged that Sean Miller left him a really good team, because he did. He left some talent.
Yeah. So you've got what do you got for me? What do you got for me?
Well, okay. So how many games do you say you've watched?
More than five. I mean, could I tweet about U of A a lot? As a matter of fact, the U of A fans, they love me. You're the only guy that gives the Wildcats credit, and the ASU fans like, the hell with them. But I tweet a lot about U of A when I'm watching their games, and I've watched, I would say, 6 or 7 of their games I've watched.
I would say I've watched about 6 or 7 minutes of U of A basketball so far this year. And it's nothing personal at all. I attended U of A for the first year and a half of my college life. I was a huge U of A basketball. I was a season ticket holder when I was a student. Well, not a season ticket. I guess it was a student ticket holder when I was down there. I won the lottery and I was able to go to a bunch of U of A basketball games back in the Chris Mills, Matt Authick, Matt Muehlbach era of U of A basketball. Gambo, you know me when I've said in the past that one of the things the pandemic kind of cost me when it came to being a sports fan,
college basketball,
it was the first thing to go. It was the first thing to go. I lost interest in it, and I've never really gotten it back. I've never regained that momentum when it comes to this sport.
Can I give you an admission for me real
quick? Sure, yeah, go for it.
For me, outside of watching a few St. John's games, I have two. I don't watch the Duke and the Kentucky and the North Carolina like I used to either. But I watch U of A, and I watch ASU. But I don't watch the big games like I used to. But I will watch ASU games, and I've watched a handful of ASU games, and I've watched a handful of U of A games because I enjoy it. I enjoy watching the games.
Yeah, I haven't enjoyed it as much. I'll be honest with you. It just hasn't, you know, like sports fans everywhere make choices every single night as to what they want to watch. And this was kind of one of the things like I just kind of cut out of my life, to be honest with you. Not because I hated it or I didn't like it. I just lost interest in it. This U of A team has gotten off to such a good start. And hearing Fran Fraschilla say it, I'm starting in my mind to think that I probably need to reintroduce them a little bit into my kind of routine, you know, not a little bit, because right now I'm so Sun-centric and I'm going to be so NFL playoff-centric this weekend. But it is time, I think, to start watching them a little bit more, especially if they've got a chance to really do some damage.
So I texted my buddy, but Casey Jacobson, because he is a college basketball analyst. He does a great job. And I said to him, I said, hey, Can U of A win it all? You know, this is Fraschilla's comments were after they beat the hell out of Stanford. It was after it was before they beat Stanford. Then I watched the Stanford game and I texted Casey. I said, can they win it all? He said, yes, U of A can win it all. I know it's hard to imagine any Pac-12 school winning a title because it hasn't been done in so long, but they're one of the elite teams I've seen. They can play both sides of the ball, consistent. They bring it every game. He thinks they can win it all.
Yeah, it's worth paying a little more attention to them. Since arriving in the Valley, this man has captured the hearts of Suns fans and players. Bismack Biyombo joins us next on the Burns and Gambo Show.